Have you ever bought a product that had fantastic claims, and when you got it, it just wasn't anywhere near what it promised it would be? Maybe on TV, you saw one of those great infomercials where the guy is screaming, order in the next 12 minutes and you'll get, you know, a free trip to Hawaii or whatever it is that they offer you. And you order it and you get it, and man, it's just a super letdown. Or maybe you've had another person promise you something and they didn't follow through. Or maybe you've made a promise to somebody else, maybe just a rash promise without thinking it through, and you failed to follow through on that promise. Well, we started looking last week at the promises that God made to Abram in the first few verses of Genesis chapter 12. And I'll tell you, they are some extraordinary, frankly, if you want me just to say it, they are hard to believe promises. If someone came up to me and promised me that these things were going to happen in my life, I'd have to have it in writing. And even then, I wouldn't believe it. We did kind of just a quick overview last week, didn't really get into the details at all. But just look at the things here that God promised he would do for Abram. And it's important to see that God is the one who's going to bring about all of these promises. Abram by himself cannot do this. God is the one who said he would do this, and they're marked throughout these verses by the two words that God says, I will. I will do this. Genesis 12:1. Now the Lord had said to Abram, go from your country, your people, your father's household, we looked at those three last week, to the land I will show you. So God's saying, Abram, it's your job to go. I can't do that part for you. See, some people rely too heavily on the phrase, let go and let God. They take that one way too far. So they say, well, I don't have to do anything in the Christian life. No, just read Paul's letters. You got to work out your salvation. You got to put off some stuff. You got to put on some other stuff. So God says, it's your job, Abram, to pack your stuff, to say the goodbyes, and to go. And if you do that, then he says, I will do my part. I'll lead you. Verse 2. First part of verse 2, he says, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. Now, this had to sting just a little bit for Abram, because chapter 11 that we looked at a few weeks ago, has it been weeks or years since we were there, has already told us that Sarah, Abram's wife, was what? She was barren. She could not have children. And so God comes along and he says, I'm going to make of you, I'm not just going to give you a child. He goes way above and beyond. He says, I'm going to make of you a great nation and I'm going to bless you. So this is getting now more unbelievable. This is like way past the promise of Ginsu knives on TV. This is way out there. And yet God is saying, Abram, have faith in me. Have faith in me. Trust me. Believe in me. I can do things that you can't even see yet. You can't even conceive of. Verse 2b, he says, I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. It's interesting to me. I think of this verse, and my mind immediately goes back to chapter 11, verse 4, when those people were scrambling frantically to build the Tower of Babel. And they said, we're going to build this to the heavens, and we will make our name great. God says here in verse 2, Abram, don't worry about trying to make your own name great. I'll make my name great through you. Man, there's a lot there. Especially for us men. Guys, we really struggle with this. Everything in our culture, everything in the business world, screams at us to make our name great. to make sure we have that certain title on the business card so we can slide them out at those networking functions. Hey, I'm the CEO of so-and-so. We want everybody to know who we are. We're working for that corner office. We're working for that company BMW. Whatever it is. You know why, guys, we struggle with this? It's in our fallen nature. We want to make our name great. Guys, be very careful. Be very careful. This is one we've got to bring to God constantly and lay it down before Him and say, God, I want to humble myself in this matter so that you don't have to humble me. You rather humble yourself so He doesn't have to. I've been on the other side of that. It's not good. So God says, Abram, I am going to make your name great. And there's the important difference. Verse 3, God says, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. Wow, what an interesting statement this is. Does God curse people? Doesn't seem nice, does it? There's some very strong language in the Old Testament that God uses for those people who come against Him and His people. We don't talk like that today. God is very stern on people who hate His people and who war against His people. He's like a mother bear who comes out to defend her cubs. I'm thankful I have a God like that who defends us. He's not ashamed to say it either. And so this promise is still alive and well today. Have you ever taken a map of the world and looked at Israel, draw an outline around it, and noticed how small Israel is compared to the rest of the countries in the world? It's this tiny little speck. And yet Israel is in the news almost every day. Why is that? Why isn't Scandinavia in the news every day? Name another country. Just last week, 200 rockets fired into Israel. It's all the time. And here's what we see happening. Through my lifetime, I remember this. Any country that has risen up against Israel has ultimately incurred God's wrath. This is why I get very, very nervous when I see our country taking steps to turn our back on Israel. Because God's promise is true that He gave to Abram 4,000 years ago. He says, my promises will not change. And Abram, I'm going to bless you. And from Abram came the nation of Israel. I'm going to bless you. And anybody who blesses you, I will bless. And anybody who curses you, I'm going to curse. It's a long-term promise. It's still rolling on. Second part of verse 3 says, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. Well, how is that possible? How in the world did that come about? Well, through Abram, Christ came. And through Christ, everybody in the world has been blessed or has the opportunity to be blessed by hearing the gospel and receiving eternal life. Now we're beginning to see why I've told you Genesis chapter 12 is one of the key chapters in the whole Bible. Because from here, God begins working with this man, Abram, and from here, the whole thing begins. So just take an overview now of these extraordinary promises. He says, I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. I will bless all the families of the earth through you. And folks, we've got to understand this. I said it just a moment ago. But we've got to understand that Abram cannot possibly bring these blessings about by himself. God's blessings must be present in order for Abram to carry any of this out. And the same thing is still true in our lives and in this church today. Unless the blessing of God is upon us, We cannot bring about one single thing of lasting value for the kingdom of God. Oh, we can be engaged in all kinds of busy religious stuff. We can have lots of activity going on. But activity does not necessarily mean that the presence of God is involved there. So we see these amazing promises of God. And in fact, frankly, they, as I said, they just sound too good to be true. I've told you before, I'm a skeptic. I'm Thomas. I don't say that with any amount of pride. I wish I wasn't that way. But if I'm in the store and I pick up a box of cereal and it says, new and improved, I smirk and go, I doubt it. I've been scammed by General Mills before. I don't trust these people. And here, God gives all these enormous, truly in the true definition of the word, unbelievable promises to Abram. And what does the next verse say? So Abram went. Abram went, as the Lord had told him. This is a life-changing statement, folks. I've read this verse for years, and I've tried so much to figure out how I can live in this verse. And I'm still asking God to give me this kind of faith. I'm like the man who said to Jesus, Jesus said to him, anything is possible if you believe. And he was so honest, he said, Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief. You been there? Abram didn't smirk. He doesn't seem to flinch. He doesn't ask for a guarantee. He doesn't call in his lawyer to read the fine print. It just says, so Abram went as the Lord told him. He just believed. He literally took God at his word. It's astounding. So this ties into, of course, Hebrews 11:1, which says, what is faith? Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So faith, through the eyes of faith, you and I can already hold in our hands and see something that doesn't even exist yet. Do you get that picture? It's powerful, man. So I've read theology books and commentaries on faith, trying to give descriptions. They all fall short for me. I've tried to write them. They all stink. So here's the greatest example of this I ever saw in my life. 22 years ago, I think it was, our daughter Caroline, is about 3 years old. She said, Daddy, can we go to Disney World? And me trying to teach our daughter financial responsibility, rather than saying, sure, we'll put that on the calendar, I kind of got down on her level. I said, well, hon, that would be great. We can definitely plan towards that. I said, but it's really expensive to go to Disney World, so we can start saving for that. And we'll do that. We'll start saving to go to Disney World, but it's going to take a while. You know, I said, it'll probably take a couple years before we can go. And she said, okay, here's the first thing we're going to do when we get there. And she said, we're going to ride the Dumbo ride first. And she's like, Daddy, did you know you can ride an elephant? And it flies. And then she said, after that, we're going to ride the teacups. She said, Daddy, I know you'll probably get sick, but will you ride him with me? And I was like shell-shocked. And I said, no. I said, honey, wait. I don't think you understand. I said, this is going to take a long time for us to save enough money to go to Disney World. We can't go right now. It's going to take a long time. She said, I know. So the first thing we're going to do is ride the Dumbo ride. And I'll tell you what, I just stopped talking in that moment, and I let her show me what faith looked like. It was magnificent. The faith of a child to take her daddy's word. She took what didn't exist yet, and she was already living there. It's the greatest example of faith I've ever seen. I can throw all my commentaries out. That's it right there. That's faith. So it was with Abram. God said, Abram, here are all these things that I will do for you. And Abram said, I believe it. Let's get on it. But now here's where real faith proves itself. Faith doesn't just say, I believe it. Faith steps out and does it. See, we can talk about faith all day long. We can read about faith. We can listen to sermons about faith. We can travel the world and give lectures about faith. But until we step out and actually do what God has called us to do by faith, all that talk, all that learning, it's nothing but good intentions. And good intentions are useless unless they're actually turned into action. I can have the best intentions to call someone who needs to be called. And this does happen to me sometimes. And 3 weeks go by, 4 weeks go by, and I see the person and I go, oh, I meant to call them, and I never did. Good intentions. They've got to be turned into action. If you intended to pay your power bill for the last 6 months, Duke Power won't accept good intentions. They only accept payments. So you have to turn that into action. So Abram not only believes God, but he also steps out and he does what God called him to do. And here's what that means for him in real life. It's so easy for us to read this on paper. But now let's take a look behind the scenes of how that plays out for him. It means, as we looked at briefly last week, he has to leave everything he's familiar with. He has to leave all his extended family. He has to leave all his business associates, his homeland, the place where he grew up. And the last verse of chapter 11 verse 32, tells us that his father had just died. He buried his father, and he had to leave his father and go. So now it's getting real. Now it's not just, "Ooh, God, I love you, I praise you, I'll do anything for you." Now it's time to put on the boots and start walking. This is when faith turns into sweat. It's more than just singing a nice song and quoting nice Christian cliches. Now this is where faith really begins to work itself out. Verse 4 continues, "So Abram went as the Lord told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran." So he was a spry young fella. Verse 5, "And Abram took Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son." Remember, Abram's brother had died. So Abram kind of adopted Lot. "He took Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran." We'll see this in weeks to come. "And they set out to go to the land of Canaan." And so we can sort of read this and we can just move happily along. Okay, so they left Haran and they moved to Canaan. But listen, folks, there were tears involved in this. You ever packed up all your stuff and moved? I mean, this trip they made from Ur to Canaan was about 800 miles. There were tears here. There was a tearing away here. Surely Abram walked to his father's grave one more time and sat there. And he had to leave. This leaving, there was a tearing. Because, folks, I want to tell you, when God calls us to follow him, listen, there will always be something we have to leave behind. I've told you this before. The reason for that is because you cannot follow God and stay where you are at the same time. You cannot. And I don't mean that geographically. Sometimes that's the case. But rarely is that the case. You cannot follow God and stay where you are at the same time. I mean that in terms of your attachments, your loyalties, your priorities. God calls you to obey Him in some matter, and it touches that relationship. And maybe, students, you know that relationship you're in is not honoring God. So you have a choice to make. Who are you going to tear away from? You're going to tear away from God to keep this relationship, or are you going to tear away from this relationship to follow God? Maybe it's a pursuit of money or status or pleasure or possessions. Fill in the blank. And God asks you to follow Him in some way. You got a decision to make, because you cannot follow God and stay where you are at the same time. This must have been incredibly difficult for Abram to take this step in certain ways, but perhaps it was a time where the death of his father was kind of the closing of a chapter, where he kind of launched out from there to go, and he stepped out by faith. So he steps out, and he goes, he obeys God, he does exactly what God has told him to do. So surely now, surely that he's done exactly what God has told him to do, he steps out, he takes this journey, he's 800 miles from home, exactly where God has told him to go. So surely now, that must mean that he will not experience any problems now at all, because he's done exactly what God told him to do, right? Wrong. Let me jump ahead a little bit and give you a peek into some of the things we're going to see in the weeks to come that will await him. When he arrived in the so-called Promised Land, it was inhabited by unbelievers, the Canaanites, who were not his friends. He wasn't even able to take possession of the land that he had been promised. He had no home to live in. He almost had his wife taken from him. He could have been put to death by Pharaoh. His nephew Lot was taken captive by an enemy, and Abram had to go and basically fight a war to get his nephew back. And 25 years went by as he waited for this promised child to come. 25 years. I can't wait till next Tuesday for some things. And I'm going, God, do you remember my name? 25 years. Promise is still not fulfilled. And by the way, Abram died without seeing most of these promises ever fulfilled. You ever been there in your walk with God? You ever felt that way? You ever thought, God, the more I follow you, the more struggles I seem to face. The more enemies seem to come into my life, the more that I follow you. Folks, that's often what it means to walk by faith and follow God. And if you listen to too much of the wrong teaching, you'll get very confused about what it means to follow God. Some people will tell you, oh, listen, you follow God and He'll make all your wishes come true. He'll give you the best life possible. Read the last half of Hebrews 11. Not today, it's Mother's Day. Some other day, read the last half of Hebrews chapter 11. If you can read that without a lump in your throat, you need to check your pulse, because it's horrifying. It's horrifying what those believers went through on this earth. It says none of them received what was promised in this lifetime, but it says of those people, the world was not worthy of them. Bible says following God is warfare from beginning to end. Rex and Linda, I bet you guys probably remember the first words that were ever spoken to this church. They were this: you have just started a war. And everybody's like, what? What now? Yeah, well, it's proven to be true in many ways. Oh, so many wonderful, joyful times. But boy, it's been warfare. This is why the Bible tells us, put on the whole armor of God. You don't wear armor unless you're going into battle. You don't wear 100 pounds of armor if you're going to Target to pick up stuff for the week. It's for warfare because we're in a battle. So Abram steps out by faith. He doesn't see any promises come true yet. He encounters all kinds of obstacles. And how does he respond? Well, he arrives in this land filled with unbelievers. And he begins planting God's flag there by building altars and worshiping God in public. He builds altars in Genesis 12:7, Genesis 12:8, Genesis 13. And we see this going through. And so here's one, Genesis 12:6 and 7. Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. And it says, at that time, the Canaanites were in the land. And we read that and go, that sounds nice. No, not so nice. And then verse 7 says, then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, he reminds him of this promise. I wonder why I needed to remind Abram. Again, we're getting a condensed view of the timeline here. Some days had passed, weeks had passed. I wonder if Abram was looking around at all this going, yikes, this doesn't exactly look like I thought. God comes to Abram and he reminds him, hey, Abram, to your offspring, I will give this land. So what did he do? He built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. Now, surely we have to stop and ask, of all the things God could have included in this section of Scripture, which, as I've said, is a pivotal section of Scripture, why in the world would God mention an oak tree in verse 6? Why would he do that? I mean, on this 800-mile journey, I'm guessing Abram had walked past a bunch of trees. Not one of them were mentioned. And yet here in verse 6, it says he came to a place called Shechem. Remember that name? And he came in that place to a tree, an oak tree, called the Oak of Moreh. So I got to stop and say, got to be something important about this tree and why Abram chose this place to stop and to build an altar. Well, in fact, there was something special. I'll remind you again quickly for those who weren't here. Abram's journey there from Ur up to Haran down to Shechem. So that's where he is. And now he's in Shechem at the Oak of Moreh. This oak tree does, in fact, have great significance. It's mentioned in numerous places. For example, Genesis 35, 4. This is later on now. This is Abram's grandson. It says, so the people gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had and the rings in their ears, and Jacob buried them under the oak at Shechem. Joshua 24, verses 25 and 26. On that day, Joshua made a covenant for the people, and there at Shechem, he established for them a statute and ordinance. Joshua recorded these things in the book of the law of God. Then he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak that was near the sanctuary of the Lord. So what exactly do we know about this spot there, this oak tree? Well, when you look at history, we find out that this oak at Shechem was I guess you could call it a holy place for pagans. They used to come to this oak tree and perform pagan worship. Their leader, their diviner, I guess you could call him, their soothsayer would come and he would stand under this oak and the people would gather around. And this is what they say, that when the leaves on the tree would rustle, he would say that that was the voices of the spirit world imparting knowledge to him. And then he would then impart that knowledge to the people. So the Canaanites who lived there considered this oak tree, they considered that spot to be sacred. So what does God do? He appears to Abram right at this tree, I think as a way of saying there's a new God in town. And he's coming to claim your territory. And he's beginning with your holy place here. And so began Abram's witness in this unbelieving land. Because you got to remember, Abram wasn't just traveling with Sarah and Lot. We'll see later on. he had a massive entourage. And when he rolled into town, everybody knew they were there. They booked out the Ramada and the Best Western completely. And so as they are worshiping around this oak tree, worshiping the one true God, everybody knows they're there. And you can bet people are peeking out their windows. People are hiding behind trees and looking to see what's going on. They're seeing this and they're hearing this worship to God. And his witness is beginning. And from this simple step of faith, the whole world will ultimately be impacted. And it started with one man putting his faith in God and then stepping out on faith to actually act upon it. But Abram doesn't stay there. He moves on to do what God tells him to do next. And we begin to wind it down quickly with this. Verse 8 says, from there he moved on to the hill country to the east at Bethel, and he pitched his tent there. And it goes on and says, verse 9, he went on toward the south. Abram now is constantly on the move. So the testimony of God is spreading, and he's building altars as he goes, and he's calling on the name of the Lord. And it says here, and we'll see going forward, it says repeatedly that Abram lived in tents. Not in tents. He wasn't wound up, but in tents. He lived in a tent. Now remember, Abram left Ur. I showed you pictures of what they've excavated. It was a massive, sprawling, modern metropolis of a city. Indoor plumbing, the works. He left that place to do what God told him to do, and now he and his wife are living in a tent. Anybody here still want to obey God? And as he's in the tent, the promises of God must be ringing in his ears. I'm going to make of you a great nation. I'm going to make your name great. I wonder if Abram was thinking, you know, this doesn't look like the brochure. This doesn't look anything like what I was expecting. I wonder if along the way, on that journey, he and Sarah were talking about, wow, Abe, hey, you're going to be the leader of a great nation. How big is our house going to be, you know? They were talking about, are we going to have a swimming pool? What color Jag are we going to get? Is it going to be the British Racing Green or the white one? Or they were normal people. And they get there, and it's just nothing, nothing like what they thought. Hebrews 11 tells us that by faith, Abram went to live in the land of promise as a foreigner, living in tents. And we think, well, that can't be God's will. No, it was. It was. See, God calls us in very strange ways sometimes. He calls us to follow him, and his calls are often followed by tests of faith. And so I wonder this morning as we close, is there anything holding you back from following God in some small way? Again, I say what I said last week. Let's not brush this off and go, yeah, well, he hasn't called me to the mission field, because we're so good at sweeping this kind of thing under the rug. Let's think smaller. I rarely say that to people. It's like the opposite. But today, let's think smaller. Is there anything small in your daily life that God has already asked you to do that you haven't stepped out by faith and obeyed? Would you be willing this week to say, God, would you give me the faith to step out and take this little step of faith so that I can trust you there so that my faith can grow a little more next week and next week and next week? Because as we'll see in the coming weeks, folks, while things look bad now, God will be faithful, and his promises will come true. We can trust him. Where are you in this whole thing today? Where are you in your journey of following him by faith? I hope we're all in this together. I hope we're all willing to admit, man, I'm not there yet, but I want to be. I want to be on the move. I want to be on the journey. And I hope we can all do that together. Let's pray.
You've been listening to a broadcast from LifePoint Church in Greenville, South Carolina. If this ministry has touched your life in some way, we would love to hear from you. Just visit our website at www.lifepointsc.org for more information. Or, if you prefer to reach us by letter, you can write to us at P.O. Box 27036, Greenville, South Carolina, 29616, USA. Until next time, may God bless you as you continue to follow Him.